All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, March 13th, 2015, and this says before the first cup of Jules here on UCY.TV. Yes, it's Friday the 13th. I totally missed that one until just a few minutes ago. So I hope everybody has their juju out and did their dance around the circle to make sure that we keep the beasties away. I was just told the Time cover appears to show Hillary Clinton with horns. It's too funny. Apparently, it's the 34th time that Time magazine has supposedly had horns on their cover. So I'll have to make sure I check out Mark Dice after the show and see what he has to say about it. So I thought we were having a heat wave here today. Actually, let me look now. When I looked about an hour ago, I was like, oh, it seems like it's so nice and warm out. And it was actually only 28 degrees. Really is kind of messed up how, oh, it's 32. Yay. It's supposed to go up to 50. So I'm pretty psyched about that. But it's amusing how you become acclimatized, if that's a word even, acclimatized to the cold after such a long period of time. I know when I was in Vegas a couple years ago, and it was 110 degrees, and we were outside for 4 straight days, about 12 or 14 hours a day. And I had just come from, when was that? That was in March or maybe the beginning of April, but I had just come from still cold and wet. And the first day or so, I was gonna die. But by day number four, I was like, man, I can get used to this 110 degrees. It doesn't seem as bad as I thought in the beginning. But you know, my friend who lived down there, after living in the desert for that many years, coming here, she would die with this cold. I don't think people who are used to warm weather, and I mean, we have lots of friends down south, so tell me if I'm right. When you guys get those snowstorms, it felt extra cold to you. But I, like I said, at 28 degrees, I'm thinking it's balmy and I open the door. So shows you how perspective can change. Ask me in July. I'm not going to be too happy about 28 degrees. All right. So where do we begin today? The last couple days, I don't know. We did a few topics this week. Don't even ask me what they were. It's been a long week, people. Yeah, we actually, the show yesterday was called China, the Renminbi, Apple, and Biometrics. And we kind of tied all those together by the end. There were a couple things I wanted to add to that today. And then we're going to continue. One of the things that Hal was just talking about, I got to tell you guys, I really love Hal's show. It makes me laugh how many times, either when he's playing before me or playing after me, that, I mean, those are just random shows. So I don't pick them. I have a big directory of Hal's shows, and it just grabs one and plays it. But it really surprises me how often Hal and I are on very similar topics, and how, I mean, I respect Hal greatly. He's very smart, very well researched, and just how many times we are both on the same page. It really kind of verifies for me that I am not absolutely batshit crazy, maybe just a little bit, but not a lot. And it makes me feel like, at least if I'm on the right track, keep going. You know, don't pause or start overthinking it. But one of the things he was talking about was his issues, like just like mine, that over the years, out of the blue, these food allergies came, and then he had all these digestive problems. It literally is your food. I had another friend of mine over the last few months telling me how he didn't feel very well, and was, you know, kind of private about it. But I eventually, as he got sicker, I started asking questions, and he's got the same thing now. So I told him, you know, this, I've been through this issue. So I got a whole box right now today. I got to hit the post office, and I'm going to send out some of my super greens and diatomaceous earth. And I got some good liver cleanse with dandelion and stuff, and see maybe if that can at least kickstart him back to ground zero so he can. He can get better. But you know, this is happening to so many people. And there was a a very long, detailed article that at some point I had up, and I need to set myself up a few more pages to put articles that need to be talked about that I don't get to because I don't have that, and they get lost in the feed eventually. But there was a really great story that talked about the gut and the lack of digestion and the glyphosate. And remember, we had listened to multiple clips by Dr. Huber talking about the glyphosate killing all the beneficial bacteria. And that wasn't just in the soil, that was in the animals that consumed the plants that have been sprayed with it. It was in the soil around the plants that had been sprayed with it. And it was affecting the uptake of the proper minerals in the plants as well. So I'm going to take this back. And then we actually even heard another clip about Dr. Huber talking about the damage to the bees and how he didn't think it was the nicotinoids. He really thought it was the glyphosate, and showed in his research on some of the dead bees and colony collapse how they had the same issue where it was chelating minerals and things, as well as killing beneficial probiotic bacteria. He said it was a great antibiotic because it just killed everything. And I mean, what we didn't understand until just very recently is how our bodies, just like nature, are a big ecosystem of lots of different things that work together that make our bodies function properly. And without any of those, we have an imbalance in the system. So just to go on what Hale was just talking about in regards to his digestive problems and blaming it on the food, there was a story that came out of Scientific American back on February 17th, so just under a month ago, that I had had queued up, and I figured this would be a good dovetail into the show previous to mine. Mental health may depend on creatures in the gut. Now, who would have thunk that one? And this again deals with a topic that we've touched on a number of times. I do have quite a number of stories that I want to dig into because there's a lot of research going into this right now, but it's the microbiome. Remember that one? We've hit that term. Hold on. I gotta turn my heat on now. Now it's not feeling like such a heat wave now that I'm sitting all stationary. Okay, so let's read this. And then I think we're gonna hop into some DARPA stuff today because there's just way too much to let this go. The microbiome may yield a new class of psychobiotics for the treatment of anxiety, depression, and other mood disorders. Well, instead of treating anxiety, depression, and other mood disorders, let's just get off the bullshit food. Because I will guarantee you, 100%, I will guarantee you that you will feel better, at least better than you have. The notion that the state of our gut governs our state of mind dates back more than 100 years. Many 19th and early 20th century scientists believed that accumulating waste in the colon triggered a state of, quote, auto-intoxication, whereby poisons emanating from the gut produced infections that were in turn linked with depression, anxiety, and psychosis. And, you know, that was early science, but they weren't too far off when you think about what we know now. A lot of killing this microbiome or your gut bacteria causes you to get leaky gut syndrome and then improper absorption of nutrients. And from there, it can create an immune response, like an allergy. Inflammation. I mean, I would literally, when I would get anything inside of me food-wise that had that poison in it, I could feel from my upper esophagus, my stomach, and all the way down through my intestines, it felt like my entire inside swelled up. And that's how I remember it, because I was still young enough to be at home when that first started. I remember telling my mother. It felt like my intestines were swollen. And I mean, now everything that we see, holy shit, that's exactly what it does. It causes an autoimmune response in the body. And of course, from there, that's when the first time then after that, I had hair issues and thyroid issues. And I'm like, oh, they're autoimmune diseases. You know, it progresses. It starts at this very early stage. And then your body starts to throw up the red flags and say, red alert, invader, invader. Where is it? We don't know. It's in everything. It's in the chemicals that have been ingested and are now spread all throughout the body. And that's where the mass attack happens. And if you look at the way allergies to outside influences versus autoimmune, which I always told my allergist, autoimmune to me, the way I see it in my own body, is like an internal allergic response to something. He's like, they have nothing to do with each other. Well, guess what? 20 years later, yes, they do. That's why allergists are now called like immunological whatever. I mean, there's a whole immunology point and autoimmune connection that fit in there. I'm trying to remember. Blood tests. There's this IG, but I don't remember what the name of it is. But if you ever go for like allergy tests and then you get blood tests done around the same time, you're going to see that there's this substance, and it's on the blood test, it's labeled IG, and I think it's a histone. But when it's elevated, it means that your body is trying to fight something off, and it could be an allergy, or it could be a cancer, or it could be autoimmune disease. And they're all related. And I really think it has to do with the inflammation part of it. And if you really dig into the science, inflammation is like the key to all disease. If you can control inflammation, you will be a much healthier person. And I believe that that's one of the reasons why turmeric works so well on so many different things, because turmeric is one of the world's, if not the world's, most potent natural anti-inflammatory. So anyway, let me get back to the story. So poisons emanating from the gut produced infection that were in turn linked with depression, anxiety, and psychosis. Patients were treated with colonic purges and even bowel surgeries until these practices were dismissed as quackery. Now we know that they do like colonic coffee enemas and things. I mean, I don't know about that. You can keep that one. But if you guys remember the one Daily Dose, I think it was the Daily Dose show, or maybe, no, it was a Robin Freeland show where that story had come out about butt chugging. Good topic for a Friday. Use your imagination if you missed that show about 2 years ago. But there were kids at a university that had come up with some new way to get wasted really fast, and it was called butt chugging, and it was similar to a funnel except from the other direction. But I don't remember if a kid died or not, but I know that there were some kids that got extremely sick, and that is because there is direct absorption into the bloodstream from the intestines. And, you know, so by not taking it by mouth, it wasn't being filtered or anything like that. Your liver wasn't getting a handle on it, and it was going straight in. But you definitely want to be careful there. So colonic purges, I don't know. A dose of coffee direct might be a little too much. The ongoing exploration of the human microbiome promises to bring the link between the gut and brain into clearer focus. Scientists are increasingly convinced that the vast assemblage of microfauna in our intestines may have a major impact on our state of mind. The gut-brain axis seems to be bidirectional. The brain acts on gastrointestinal and immune functions that help to shape the gut's microbial makeup. But the gut microbes make neuroactive compounds, including neurotransmitters and metabolites that can also act on the brain. Now, what's really interesting is that they're putting all kinds of money and research into all of this as the Brain Project is going on. So, you know, they always spin it like it's going to cure your ills and we're going to make you healthy again, people, because we're using your tax dollars at some point in this research, but don't think that it's all for your best interest. Your best interest is just a side effect. These interactions could occur in various ways. Microbial compounds communicate via the vagus nerve, or the vagus nerve, which connects the brain and the digestive tract. Wow, I didn't know there was a direct nerve to the brain and digestive tract. Vagus. V-A-G-U-S. Huh. We'll have to look that one up. All right, let me get back here. To the vagus nerve, which connects the brain and the digestive tract, and microbially derived metabolites interact with the immune system, which maintains its own communication with the brain. Sven Peterson, a microbiologist at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, has recently shown that gut microbes help to control leakage through both the intestinal lining and the blood-brain barrier, which ordinarily protects the brain from potentially harmful agents. And yes, I mentioned that they have found that a lot of people that have the same disorder that apparently Hal and I both have had, and I, there have been a few other people, and I mean, I'm not going to put people's personal business out there, but Hal mentioned it on air. But there have been a few other people over the last year or so that have talked to me that have had this very same thing, and it comes back to leaky gut. Leaky gut is your blood-brain barrier is, I don't know what you'd even call it, compromised, and poisons are getting into your bloodstream that should normally be filtered out. And that's a dangerous thing, and it causes then autoimmune disease because your body doesn't know how to react to all this stuff. Microbes may have their own evolutionary reasons for communicating with the brain. They need us to be social, says John Cryon, a neuroscientist at the University College Cork in Ireland, so that they can spread through the human population. If you remember, too, there was a story we did probably about a year ago about, I think he was Russian or Ukrainian scientist who spent the last 30 years of his career using himself as a test subject when he started to get an inkling that some sort of microbe that his cat had was affecting his brain. I don't know if you guys remember that story, but it was pretty messed up. And he had proven, and they used to think he was a crackpot until he did all this research, and he pretty much proved it. Now the scientific community dug into it, and they're like, wow, we think he's right. There is a digestive microbe that cats get on them that they think this microbe has evolved to make people obey cats' commands. I don't know if you remember that, but it was pretty messed up. And he had gone through like all this stuff, and it was like, wow, yeah, this dude's definitely onto something. So it's interesting, having seen that story about a year ago, now they're really looking more into the microbes that are in the gut and how they can affect the brain directly. You know, it sounded kind of science fiction, but and it's not just human biological organisms. I mean, this dude was showing something in a feline that could affect human brain and the way that we react, you know, the chemicals that it expresses. Maybe if I have a clip to play a little later, I'll actually find that story for you. Microbes may have their own evolutionary reasons for communicating with the brain. They need us to be social, says John Cryon, a neuroscientist at the University College Cork in Ireland, so that they can spread through the human population. Cryon's research shows that when bred in sterile conditions, germ-free mice lacking in intestinal microbes also lack the ability to recognize other mice with whom they interact. In other studies, disruptions of the microbiome induced mice behavior that mimics human anxiety, depression, and even autism. Well, there you go, people. Glyphosate is a great antibiotic, and it's killing all of our gut flora. So is the killing of our gut flora what's causing this explosion in autism? I mean, I know that there have been mothers doing experiments trying to bring their kids back, and they found that a lot of it could be dealt with diet. Man, this is crazy. In some cases, scientists restore more normal behavior by treating their test subjects with certain strains of benign bacteria. Nearly all the data so far are limited to mice, but Cryon believes the findings provide fertile ground for developing analogous compounds, which he calls psychobiotics, for humans. And how interesting. I mean, one of the first things that started killing gut microbes that we were overprescribed by our doctors for 30 or 40 years were antibiotics. Anti being against, biotics is your biomicrome or microbiome. One of the other, pick one. I don't know. I made it up. I think it's microbiome. Yes. Dietary supplements could be used as either an adjunct or sole therapy for mood disorders, and it is not beyond the realm of possibility. Well, I could tell you take some vitamin B complex And I call that the instant happy pill. There are a lot of things that bees are important for in the body. Add to that some of your metals, like your magnesiums, calcium, potassium, and you're going to have a big boost to how you feel. Maybe a little bit of iodine. A decade ago, a research team led by Nobuyuki Sudo, now a professor of internal medicine at Kyushu University in Japan, restrained germ-free mice in a narrow tube for up to an hour and then measured their stress hormone output. The amounts detected in the germ-free animals were far higher than those measured in normal control mice exposed to the same restraint. Now, that's even more interesting. So without this microbiome, if you manage to make it beyond any of the other illnesses that lack of your microbiome can cause, it causes your stress hormones to be high, which, you know, take it from someone who had lots of issues with that as well. That can put you into full-blown adrenal fatigue if it's not taken care of. You cannot go 20 years at type A personality stress levels and then supplement that with a pot of coffee because you're always so freaking tired because you're always on high speed. You never slow down. You know, that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this now. It's a slower pace. I needed to heal, but this has turned into a very stressful endeavor as well. But I mean, by properly, how would you even put this? By ingesting proper nutrients, we can circumvent a lot of these 21st century maladies, it seems. And again, it all comes back to the glyphosate. I know the story's not saying it, but we've done so much research on glyphosate over the last couple of years. I could tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, and maybe that's not the only thing, but I could guarantee you it's probably one of the biggest things that causes this. It says, these hormones are released by the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which in the germ-free mice was clearly dysfunctional. So your hypothalamus and your pituitary and your adrenals, there you go. But more important, the scientists also found that they could induce more normal hormonal response simply by pre-treating animals with a simple microbe, a bacterium called Bifidobacterium infantis. This finding showed for the first time that intestinal microbes could influence stress responses in the brain and hinted at the possibility of using probiotic treatments to affect the brain function in beneficial ways. And yes, I do my probiotics on a daily basis. You can get those separately. They have them in my microplant powder. They also have them in my super greens. I feel so much better when I make sure I get my probiotic. It really got the field off the ground, says Emeryn Meyer, a gastroenterologist and a director of Center for Neurobiology of Stress at the University of California, Los Angeles. Meanwhile, a research team at McMaster University in Ontario, led by microbiologist Premzil Bernack and gastroenterologist Stephen Collins, discovered that if they colonized the intestines of one strain of germ-free mice with bacteria taken from the intestines of another mouse strain, the recipient animal would take on aspects of the donor's personality. Did you hear that? Now that's frightening. We've heard of poop transplants. Did you guys hear that? There's this, it's almost like a disorder. Some people who have taken some of these newfangled generation three or four antibiotics have ended up with this endless diarrhea. And I don't know, you could be infantile and laugh at that and think of all the horrible images with breakfast, but it's not funny because I actually had a friend that happened to after they had been sick and their doctor gave him some psycho new freaking antibiotic and then it never went away. And they were told by their doctor, well, it happens like one in, you know, whatever the percentage is that people actually get this chronic condition. Because it, we think it disturbed their microflora. And the only way to work on that is to start taking probiotics. But for a small percentage of people, the probiotics aren't even strong enough. So they've come up with this new treatment that they've called a fecal transplant. I remember too, we did that story when that came out. And it's a horrifying thought. It makes me want to like gag. But it seems to be helpful. But as we're reading this, as they took, and what it does basically is it recolonizes the gut bacteria from gut bacteria from another entity. But as we're listening here, this recipient animal would take on aspects of the donor's personality. I wonder if they discovered that when they did fecal implants in people. How weird would that be? Like, you think you're all fixed. Now you're all fucked up because you're not like yourself. You're like Granny who gave it up for the fecal implant. I mean, that's weird. I'll have to find that story about the Russian. I think he was a Russian scientist with the, when he discovered that the bacteria in the cat poop actually infected the human brain and changed our personalities. Says naturally, timid mice would become more exploratory, whereas more daring mice would become apprehensive and shy. Well, that's a pretty big change in personality. These tendencies suggested that microbial interactions with the brain could induce anxiety and mood disorders. Barrick and Collins segued into gut-brain research from their initial focus on how the microbiome influences intestinal illnesses. People who suffer from these conditions often have co-occurring psychiatric problems, such as anxiety and depression, that cannot be fully explained as an emotional reaction to being sick. By colonizing germ-free mice with the bowel contents of people with irritable bowel syndrome, which induces constipation, diarrhea, pain, and low-grade inflammation, but is no known cause, hey, there you go. The swelling of the intestines for no fucking reason. The McMaster's team reproduced many of the same gastrointestinal symptoms, and the animals developed leaky intestines. That's what I told you. Their immune systems activated. That's what I told you. And they produced a barrage of pro-inflammatory metabolites. That's what I told you. Many with known nervous system effects. Moreover, the mice also displayed anxious behavior, as indicated in a test of their willingness to step down from a short raised platform. Hey, I wonder if that's where my out of the blue fear from heights came from. This is an extremely interesting article. I hope that you are finding it interesting as well. The autism connection. Scientists have also begun to explore the microbiome's potential role in autism. In late 2007, Paul Patterson, a neuroscientist and developmental biologist at the California Institute of Technology, was intrigued by epidemiological data showing that women who suffer from a high, prolonged fever during pregnancy are up to 7 times more likely to have a child with autism. These data suggested an alternative cause for autism besides genetics, and to investigate, Patterson induced flu-like symptoms into pregnant mice with a viral mimic, a immunostimulant called polyinosyncic polycycloside acid, or poly I colon C. He called this the maternal immune activation, MIA model. The offspring of Patterson's MIA mice displayed all three of the core features of human autism: limited social interactions, a tendency toward repetitive behaviors, and reduced communication, which he assessed by using a special microphone to measure the length and the duration of their ultrasonic vocalizations. In addition, the mice had leaky intestines, which was important because anywhere from 40 to 90% of all children with autism suffer from gastrointestinal symptoms. Then, a Caltech microbiologist, Sarkis Mamesian, Mazmanian and his doctoral student Elaine Hisayo discovered that MIA mice, so that is pregnant mice with immune activation, also have abnormal microbiomes. Specifically, two bacterial classes, the Clostridia and the Bacteroidea, were far more abundant in the MIA offspring than in normal mice. Mazmanian acknowledges that these imbalances may not be the same as those in humans with autism, but the findings were compelling, he says, because it suggested that the behavior state of the MIA mice, and perhaps by extension autistic behaviors in humans, might be rooted in the gut rather than in the brain. This raised provocative questions, says Mermazian. If we treated gastrointestinal symptoms in mice, would we see changes in their behavior? Mermazian and Hizio also investigated by dosing the animals with a microbe known for its anti-inflammatory properties, Bacteroides fragilis, which also protects mice from experimentally induced colitis. Anyone who's ever had or known anyone with colitis knows that that is extremely horrific. And again, they don't really know what causes it. Certain foods can, but they think that it is some sort of inflammation that occurs, as well as could be autoimmune. So it also protects mice from experimentally induced colitis. Results showed that the treatment fixed intestinal leaks and restored a more normal microbiota. It also mitigated the tendency toward repetitive behavior and reduced communication. That is Bacteroides fragilis, Bacteroides, space fragilis, fragilis, if anyone wants to look that up and do some research. Mazmanian subsequently found that B. fragilis, for short, reverses MIA deficits even in adult mice. So at least in this mouse model, it suggests features of autism are not hardwired and they are reversible. And that is a huge advance, he says. This is limits of research. So anyway, I'm going to tell everybody out there, if you are not doing some sort of probiotic, find one. Go online, find at your whatever your vitamin place is, or, you know, if you buy from Hemp USA or you buy from Amazon even, there are all kinds of products out there that either A, are a standalone probiotic, number two, are integrated with some sort of cleansing powder, or number three, some sort of super greens or whatever. But I highly recommend anybody who is experiencing depression, digestive issues, just a general overall malaise, like, oh my God, I'm getting old. I'm telling you, probiotics are like this massive key that nobody ever talked about for years. And then for many years after that, they were only the grungy greenies that everyone pointed to and went, probiotics. But I'm telling you, I really, really, really think that there's something to this. Now, they're going to talk about probiotics in yogurt. And that was one of my first beliefs. I gave yogurt to my kid when she was little until I started learning about bovine growth hormone, number one. And yeah, you can even get organic yogurt. So maybe organic yogurt is okay. But then we started reading about titanium dioxide when we were doing the nanotech in food. Titanium dioxide is one of the biggest uses of nanotech in food, and it's a whitening agent. And, you know, I had a good friend that I grew up with, and I hadn't talked to her many years. She moved when we were kids, and she found me. I was like, holy crap, where have you been? But we talked for quite a while, and I found out she was an artist, and her artwork was in like some of the big galleries and stuff, even when we were in high school. She was really, really good. And now she lives out in the country and does lots of barns and pastures and things. But she's got a good cartel, if that's what you call it, a good audience. She's a lot of people that buy her stuff. But one of the things, she was sick for so many years, and she was telling me about having to learn about all this stuff and discovering that titanium dioxide in the white paint had actually given her heavy metals poisoning. And she went through many years with doctors. No one could find out what was wrong with her. And so she did her own chelation to try and get all the heavy metals out of herself. And I mean, it had messed her up mentally, she said, really bad for a long time. So just stay away from titanium dioxide. That's one thing. Make sure you always check the labels because they put that shit in all kinds of vitamins and stuff. If you didn't realize it, that's a nanotechnology. Now, from the perspective that it's nano-sized, nanoparticulate sized, but that shit crosses the blood-brain barrier. It's small enough. And there's all kinds of things going on here, but stay away from titanium dioxide. I would say try and get a pure probiotic versus eating something in yogurts. All right, but let's finish the story because it's already halfway through the show, and this might be the only thing we do. I wanted to do DARPA for Friday the 13th. Limits of research. The human gut microbiome evolved to help us in a myriad of ways. Gut microbes make vitamins, break a dietary fiber into digestible short-chain fatty acids, and govern normal functions in the immune system. And look at, guys, that's what I had. I couldn't digest meats anymore. This is fiber, but I couldn't digest proteins. And I had autoimmune disorders that came out of nowhere. And I'm still telling you, it was the lack of proper gut flora. I'm pretty certain of that. Probiotic treatments such as yogurt, supplemented with beneficial strains of bacteria, are already being used to help some gastrointestinal disorders, such as, hey, antibiotic-induced diarrhea. That's what I was talking about. There are some people, though, that that doesn't help, and that's where the fecal transplant comes from. But there is little data about probiotic effects on the human brain, and that is a good question, especially when they found that doing a transplant from one intestinal bacteria strain to another mouse causes changes in their personality. It would make one question where the original colonies of bacteria and probiotics came from. They could actually. Well, what a scary thought. If it affects personality that much, what if they just started, and this is just me postulating, but what if they just started putting out probiotics that make normally aggressive people placid and then encourage it and put it into all of our food and stuff? Because, I mean, they don't need to label half the shit they put in our food. It'd be even better than the fluoride. They'd get rid of all the fluoride out of the water. And just get us all to eat these probiotics that make us mellow, happy people. Oh, how evil. But you know what? If DARPA's involved in any way, shape, or form, you better believe that they're thinking about that. Okay, I'm going to finish this. In a proof of concept study, Mayer and his colleagues at UCLA uncovered the first evidence that probiotics ingested in food can alter human brain function. Oh, no. Telling you, it makes me feel much better. The researchers gave healthy women yogurt twice a day for a month. Then brain scans using fMRI were taken as these women were shown pictures of actors with frightened or angry facial expressions. Normally, such images trigger increased activity in emotional processing areas of the brain that leap into action when someone is in a state of heightened alert. Right. Like Danger Will Robinson and everybody goes to red alert. Or like the American public going, holy fuck, there's criminals running our government. Maybe we should all get our fat asses off the couch, except nobody stands up. Oh, this is bad. Maybe this is what they've been doing to us. Wait, let's read a little bit more. So normally, such images trigger increased activity in emotion processing areas of the brain that leapt into action when someone is in a state of heightened alert. Anxious people may be uniquely sensitive to these visceral reactions, but the women on the yogurt diet exhibited a less reflexive response, which shows that bacteria in our intestines really do affect how we interpret the world, says gastroenterologist Kristen Tillich, the study's principal investigator. Mayer cautions that these results are rudimentary. We simply do not know yet if probiotics will help with human anxiety, but our research is moving in that direction. Strains of Bifidobacterium, which is common in the gut flora of many mammals, including humans, have generated the best results so far. Crayon, I keep calling him Crayon, but it's C-R-Y-A-N, Cryan. Cryan recently published a study in which two varieties of Bifidobacterium produced by his lab were more effective than Escitalopram, which is Lexapro, at treating anxious and depressive behavior in a lab mouse strain known for pathological anxiety. Although Crayon is optimistic that such findings may point a way to the development of psychobiotics, he is wary of the hype. We still need a lot more research into the mechanisms. But, you know, I mean, I guess from some directions, this is very interesting because basically what they're saying is that these psychotropic drugs that they've been giving people for depression, these SSRIs and whatever, serotonin uptake inhibitors that they've been giving people for the longest time, there may be another option, and that is with this, these different gut biotics. The only problem is that I see is as they're beginning to understand this, and like I said, and they're doing all this brain research, so don't think that, you know, this isn't full tilt, because it absolutely is with DARPA and whatever, that this would give them a great new tool to be able to hide shit in our food and control our reactions to things. There was an article out of Scientific American. I just dropped that into chat. If anyone pays attention when the shows get ripped up to YouTube, I try, if I have time, to reference all of my materials that I talked about in the descriptions of the archives. But if you want to see this and you can't find the archive or you're not in chat, it's in Scientific American. It was February 17th of 2015, and it was titled "Mental Health May Depend on Creatures in the Gut." That was the name of the story. That was a very good story. Okay. So I think I've established that. I mean, we've talked about that for a very long time. And just through my personal experiences. And then I did that because I had the story open. I just found that the other day. And Hale was talking about some of the same things and experiences that I'd been through. So I thought I would share that with you. Here's another story. This is going to kind of dovetail into DARPA if we have enough time. I have about 10 minutes here, 12 minutes maybe. We had read last year about some of the brain research DARPA was doing and how they had, you know, using our PTSD vets, always the eternal guinea pig when they come back, and they've turned them into mercenaries. These poor guys went in thinking they're helping do things, and then they were forced to do horrible things while they were overseas. They're never the same. I have lots of friends over the years who've gone in and come out, and they're just never the same if they see combat, that's for sure, especially if they are forced to do something like kill women or children in the name of self-defense. It's a pretty horrific thing, but... You know, typically when these guys come back, they have problems trying to reintegrate. They have problems if they're married with families. They have problems trying to be the person they were before. Causes a lot of stress. So, of course, the VA that cares so much about the veterans, which, of course, is absolute bullshit because they don't. They just care about them because, hey, you're a great guinea pig and you have nothing coming and going except the VA. They start doing these tests in the name of trying to cure them. So DARPA and the Department of Defense have been working on all these PTSD cures, and one of them was being able to erase negative thoughts for PTSD patients. And reinsert like happy memories. And the next thing I saw, they're like, well, the same research we're using now, we could do other things like maybe flashes of light and insert happy memories. We could insert a chip into your brain and upload memories. Alzheimer's patients, PTSD, major depression. We have ways to fix those. Well, there's all kinds of stuff now, like all over the last few days, stories about brain implants, flashes of light, or flashes of sound, actually, which there was another study by DARPA about using sound, ultrasound this time, and this one is erasing negative memories while you sleep. So let's read this. One day, scientists may be able to erase negative memories in your brain while you sleep. Oh my God, what a savior to the human race. We can be flash upgraded while sleeping and would never know any different. And even the way this story starts out, I mean, this should give you freaking hair raising on your arms. What if scientists could sneak, listen to the way they say this, could sneak into your brain while you're sleeping and erase painful memories or turn them into happy ones? Hey, dangle, dangle. There's the carrot. Let's give us all happy memories. Sure, I'll let you wipe my brain free of everything I know and love. Even if some of it's bad stuff, it's made me who I am today. What sounds like something out of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which I don't know if that's a book or a movie, could be a reality sooner than you might expect. Surprise! Of course, nobody's saying the technique will be used to help people get over bad breakups, but it just might change the lives of those suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. In pioneering new research, neuroscientists from the French National Center for Scientific Research, the CNRS, and the ESPIC Paris Tech manipulated memories in sleeping mice using paired electrodes inserted into the brain to turn neural memories into positive ones. A new discovery as members of the scientific community buzzing. Quote, this research demonstrates a remarkable level of mastery over the cognitive machinery that gives rise to memories, says Steve Ramirez, a neuroscientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology who has conducted landmark research on memory manipulation, he told the Huffington Post in an email. Hey, here's something I want to point out to you, too. A lot of these East Coast and West Coast universities, including MIT, where the father of nanotechnology made his discovery, Weiss Institute at Harvard. Trying to remember. I mean, a whole bunch of the Southern California universities. Definitely the Ivy League. They are all getting DARPA money. And notice how these are all neuroscientists that are working on all these projects. This is part of the Brain Project. I can guarantee you that National Institute of Health has put their name and money behind it. Obama came out, 6, 8, 10 months ago, saying that the Brain Project is going to be the biggest boost to our global economy, bigger than the Genome Project was. This is real shit. And once they learn all of the mysteries of the brain, that's it, people. I mean, we won't have control over what we think or what we think we know. We're not going to have like a hard copy somewhere. Our hard copy is our brain. That's where your memories live. And once those memories have the ability of being hacked, then what do you believe anymore? This is pretty like right out there science fiction psycho movie come to life. All right, let's read a little bit more. In the experiment, the researchers placed an electrode in the hippocampus, the brain region associated with spatial memory. The other one was placed in the brain's so-called reward center. Hey, remember what I told you? The dangling carrot. That's the same center that video games interact on. Cocaine and high fructose corn syrup. It's the one that gives you an addiction. They first monitored the brain activity of each mouse as it roamed around an exploration area. As the mouse stored different memories of different locations in the exploration area, different neurons in the hippocampus lit up, indicating that spatial information was being recorded. Then the researchers monitored activity of the hippocampus at night as it consolidated memories of different locations that the mouse had visited during that day. They placed an electrode on a neuron that had lit up in one particular corner of the cage earlier that day. And when that memory was being processed, the researchers used another electrode to stimulate the brain's reward center, making the mouse associate that location with some sort of reward, such as food. How do they know it worked? Well, when the mice woke up, they ran straight to the area of the cage expecting a reward. See, I'm telling you, that dangling carrot is how they control us. That's Bernays, people. That is that instant gratification need that fuels a lot of the sleeping populace right now. And it's addictive. And it releases all the feel-good brain chemicals when it's activated. That's why it's so easy to manipulate utilizing that methodology. All right, let's get back to the story. The learning we induced during sleep was just to change the emotional value of different locations of its environment, says Dr. Karim Benanichnain, a neuroscientist at CNRS in France and one of the study's authors. Indeed, during waking hours, all the locations were neutral. What we made them learn during sleep is a particular location is now associated to a reward. That's the Pavlovian response. These results tell us something fascinating about how our brain works. Our memories seem to be stored in a piecemeal fashion. While one area of the brain holds the factual information of the memories, the emotions associated with the memory is held in a different area. So what about a human brain? In the future, scientists might be able to go into a person's brain while they are sleeping. Ding, 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 ding. And turn off the emotional element of a negative memory, essentially extracting the trauma from a traumatic experience. Now, you know, I've said a few times, too, to do a radio show, especially for me, anyway, I need to have a red button. I need to have something that causes a negative emotion to make me start spouting off about something, to make me go into the zone to have lots to say about something. Because if I don't have that emotional response, then I'm just like the frog sitting quietly on the rock, sunning myself. Ribbit. Because it doesn't matter. You know, I need to have some sort of emotional response to make it worth saying something about. If they got rid of that emotional response and they made us all flatline, that's what SSRIs do. This would be a pretty boring place. This would be a pretty boring world. And there would be a lot of us who had nothing to say about nothing. There'd be a lot of us who'd be just happy watching the day go by, not giving a care. And this is some dangerous technology that they're playing with right now. And again, it's all in the name of curing PTSD. But remember, it's about unlocking the secrets of the brain. And we get to pay for it with our tax dollars. So, let's back to the story. What about a human brain? It says they may be able to go in while people are sleeping and turn off negative emotional elements of a negative memory, essentially extracting the trauma from the traumatic experience. For humans, we would need a way to detect during sleep the periods during which the traumatic experiences are reactivated. It is likely that it will soon be possible to do with an fMRI. And, you know, remember, they already have, like, mind-controlled keyboards, mice, drones. There's videos on that. They've been doing research on that for quite a while, and actually there are products out there for sale. And that's just with a simple headband that they can detect certain sections of the brain light up. And they were able to then correlate that to being able to control objects, whether it be a mouse click or sending a drone to fly right or left or land. So they've come a long way, and a lot of that research was done with fMRI. So don't think that this is way, way future. It's pretty soon that they'll be using this on people. I could guarantee you that. It says here, it'll be a while before the technique is used on humans. Well, I bet they're already doing it, though, in experiments in the VA. I mean, I can get you, and we're not going to have time here today, but I can get you some stories where they're already working on inserting little chips and things into the brain and uploading memories and using flashes of light. I mean, this is not science fiction anymore. It's going to be a while before we use this on humans because of the risks associated with sticking electrodes into the human brain. Well, guess what? If they have other ways to do it, like flashes of light that are non-intrusive, or putting a headband around your head and just sending electrical impulses through the skull, bzz, bzz, then it's not going to be intrusive. And hey, the FDA will probably fast track it as a treatment. And the next thing you know, it's going to be sold at Christmas time on As Seen on TV. How to make yourself happier. Just put on this headband. It's called the Happy Headband. Let's forget it's all happening. Well, guys, if you can even friggin' believe it, it is 30 seconds before the end of the show. This story I will post in the chat. There's a little bit more. There's a couple links to journal of nature of neuroscience that I want to hit on a Monday. All right, everyone have an awesome Friday. Make sure you stick around. We got Hale Anthony up next again. Josh with the Anti-Tyranny News is live at 6 p.m. We got 8 o'clock tonight. Eastern Primer Time is going to be running that slot as a random replay, but Primer Time is always an awesome show, so make sure you check that out. 9 o'clock, this week's Truth on the Tracks with Brandon Turbeville. 10 o'clock, United Front Radio with Danielle and Kyle. And at 11, it's LaVon with Anti-Media Radio. So make sure you guys stick around. Come back this weekend. Saturday and Sunday are always awesome radio. I'll be working on cutting those shows right after this one. Everyone have a beer. It's Friday, Friday the 13th. Stay safe. And we will catch up with you on Monday. All right, guys, enjoy the nice weather. Everybody take care.